Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, August 22nd, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Critics say the future looks bleak for Zimbabwe with indications that there is no solution in sight for the current harsh social, economic and political situation in the country.
Nobody has come up with any solution. People are good at blaming, but they don't have anything to come up with solutions.
The president powers over all institutions that we have.
People are saying ZANU-PF has ruled for too long. The constitution says parties must participate in an election.
American academic Jean Marie Jackson says Zimbabweans are great debaters who can easily fit in any national or international stage on politics and other issues.
Zimbabwe actually has an extremely healthy and measured intellectual culture, a culture of argument, in a way that, frankly, I haven't found comparatively to be the case in even South Africa.
And tonight we have a closer look at women's issues. These stories and much, much more coming up. Critics say the future looks bleak for Zimbabwe with indications that there is no solution in sight for the current social, economic and political situation in the country. They say Zimbabweans will continue to struggle to have basic necessities while the situation continues to deteriorate. ZANU-PF, on the other hand, believes that it is doing all what it can to save the country from collapse and is blaming opposition parties and the West for the country's challenges. For perspective, we reached David Ndlovu, a ZANU-PF Central Committee member and independent political analyst Mlamuli Nkomo. Ndlovu dismisses allegations that President Robert Mugabe is the major problem in Zimbabwe.
We have a lot of people who are benefiting from the problem because the people who are looters. As we speak, the richer are becoming more richer and the poor are becoming more poorer.
At the same time, we know that there are some people who are actually blaming the ruling party for all these problems. Do you think they are fair?
Nobody has come up with any solution. People are good at blaming, but they don't have anything to come up with solutions. They've never come up with suggestions. All they do is just blame. Most of the opposition parties, they were in government. They never offered any solutions while they were in government. We thought they would come up with something, but they came up with nothing.
Mr. Nkomo, I think we have heard what Mr. Ndlovu is saying. Can you respond briefly?
The problem that we have at the moment, we have a president who is very old and who has overstayed his welcome in office. 35 years is not a joke, and 91 years for a man is not a joke. What we have is a situation whereby all other institutions in the country are powerless. And if you have a situation whereby institutions don't have power, you've got the dominance of one man. The figure and the image of Robert Mugabe, the president, towers over all institutions that we have. He seems to be dominating the courts, the key institutions of democracy, the Electoral Commission. He appoints people who are loyal to his party. The Reserve Bank has got people who are loyal to his party. Basically, every institution in Zimbabwe is one way or another dominated by ZANU-PF, the president, Robert Mugabe. There are very few institutions where there is professionalism, where people execute their duties professionally without fear or favor. So the problem we have is that we have got one man who is dominating, who is the main player, who is dominating everything.
And now some Zimbabweans think that President Robert Mugabe is the major problem in the country. What do you think about that kind of suggestion, Mr. Ndlovu?
In which way? Because he is the leader of the country. He was elected by the people. And I know that people are saying, well, why should he be elected since he's 90? But I'm saying the constitution is very clear. It says anybody above 40 is free to be elected president of the country. So he contested in his right. Because the constitution gives him the right to contest, and he did that and contested in terms of the constitution and won the election. So any other person who thinks can do better must stand for election. Unfortunately, we can't appoint someone to stand for Mugabe. We fought for democracy, and it was his democratic right to represent the party, as head of the party, and he won the election.
Mr. Nkomo, what's the way forward here? Because Mr. Ndlovu is really adamant that President Mugabe is not the problem. The problem lies with the people.
The only hope that the people of Zimbabwe have now is that ZANU-PF will fight among itself and destroy itself. I think realistically, that's the only option that we have. Because the opposition also is at 6 and 7. That's because of manipulation and interference into their affairs by ZANU-PF. And also because of lack of leadership in the opposition ranks. Some of the opposition leaders are almost like Mugabe himself.
There are suggestions that maybe the only solution is to dismantle ZANU-PF. Any thoughts about that?
ZANU-PF was not formed to be dismantled. People are saying ZANU-PF has ruled for too long. The constitution says parties must participate in an election. There's no way it says, with the exception of ZANU-PF, if the constitution can be changed to read with the exception of ZANU-PF, then it would say the participation of ZANU-PF in any election is unconstitutional. So those who feel they can remove the party through elections, they can participate in any elections.
Mr. Nkomo?
ZANU-PF is not democratic. People are bullied into voting certain candidates. If they don't toe the line, they are labeled gamma talk or they are expelled from the party. So generally, we have a problem of leadership in the country, be it in the ruling party and also in the opposition.
And when do you think all these problems facing Zimbabwe will come to an end, Mr. Ndlovu?
When people start recognizing themselves as Zimbabweans and come together to sit, discuss issues as Zimbabweans, rather than going to neighboring states and other countries throughout the world to explain Zimbabwean problems.
Your last word, Mr. Nkomo?
They are in power. So whatever problems that we have, they should take responsibility. ZANU-PF is not concerned about the welfare of Zimbabwe. It's only concerned about the welfare of its own members and the need to remain in power forever and ever.
That was political analyst Mlamuli Nkomo speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa. You also heard from David Ndlovu, a ZANU-PF Central Committee member, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
American academic Jean-Marie Jackson says Zimbabweans are great debaters who can easily fit in any national or international stage on politics and related issues. Jackson says social media discussions generated by Zimbabweans are full of interesting views and indication that they are capable of engaging in any debate. The Johns Hopkins University assistant English professor, who loves satsa and goat meat, has just returned from Zimbabwe. She speaks to Studio 7 about Zimbabweans' interest in various issues, including the recent killing of a famous lion, Cecil, by an American.
Goat is my favorite Zimbabwean meal to have with satsa, but I think there's also a hospitality dimension. I think that wherever you go, what it is that people are eating, what it is that they offer you, I think there's something very special and important about taking it.
What else do you like or don't like about Zimbabwe?
Obviously, on a practical level, tend to be institutional. As I think any of your listeners know, a lot of university employees have been put on furlough over the past couple of years. This past few months in particular, I know that at Midland State and at UZ, I believe, people weren't paid for quite a while. So I think that there's always a consciousness when you are a scholar working with Zimbabwean scholars of the fact that you have markedly different financial circumstances and markedly different levels of institutional support. So that's something that's quite difficult to reckon with if you're thinking about being a visiting scholar and trying to build up some of those relationships so that we don't end up with a situation where Western scholars are able to do more work than their counterparts who are actually living Zimbabwean realities. So that's been difficult. But like I said, in terms of things that I like, I think Zimbabwe actually has an extremely healthy and measured intellectual culture, a culture of argument in a way that, frankly, I haven't found comparatively to be the case in even South Africa.
What do you think is the depth of democracy in that country?
It's by most metrics, not particularly democratic.
You know, there are some people who argue that Zimbabweans are too educated to change the current setup, you know.
Yeah.
Do you ascribe to that kind of school of thought?
It's interesting. I recently had a couple conversations, long Facebook exchanges, and I'm very ambivalent about Facebook, but sometimes you can't avoid it, unfortunately. And I was kind of caught between a South African debate and then speaking privately with a number of Zimbabwean friends about what was going on in South African politics. And one thing that I heard over and over, and again, I think my opinion about this is less relevant just than the fact that it's out there, is that Zimbabweans are criticized by South African counterparts for not being sufficiently revolutionary or what have you. So I realize that that's an opinion that people share. I don't know. I can say that in terms of literary production and just openness and balance of conversation, I think that a widely educated population is always a much better bet than the reverse. I do understand that it may mean to some people kind of having a harder time forging solidarity. And in that case, you know, I think that some of Alex Magese's recent writing, I actually just read something this morning on labor and on the future of the labor movement, even among street vendors and things like that, is probably the most interesting way to go as something more explicitly political.
Now, let's turn to this controversial subject, Cecil the Lion. Eh?
Yeah. We
know that it was killed by an American, and that is Walter Palmer, who is claiming that it was a legal hunt. What is your opinion on that?
Cecil the Lion has been interesting to me from day one. I actually wrote, I blog in Shona, and I wrote a Shona blog on it called Shonda Yeshumba, and had some conversations surrounding that based on that piece. And it was interesting because initially all of the news that I was getting about what people are now calling Cecil Gate over here was from Zimbabwe. My social media news feeds are, for various reasons, primarily Zimbabweans. I would say probably about 80% on my Facebook account, for example. And I was getting it from them, hearing about it. We have a few acquaintances who are working in conservation over there. And then almost immediately, it kind of hit the international scene. And then I suddenly started seeing all of these posts from the same Zimbabwean friends and acquaintances often, you know, kind of reacting against the Western reaction to Cecil. So what was so interesting to me about that whole event was the way that the responses to it were ricocheting off each other. And people who have one leg in both communities, I mean, in my case, you know, kind of East Coast American and Zimbabwean, were kind of caught in the middle, trying to figure out exactly what the responsible position was to hold.
So now, what is your own opinion?
I'm a pretty big animal person, I have to admit, but I do eat meat, and I think that there are a lot of problematic aspects to the history of conservation in Southern Africa.
That was American academic Jean-Marie Jackson speaking with Studio 7 from Johns Hopkins University in USA. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. As usual, it's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum. I am Tato Muchoni, a Mandela Washington Fellow interning with the Voice of America's Zimbabwe services, standing in for Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. This evening, we are talking about celebrating the heroines. Our guests are Ntsepe Ntsita from Lesotho, CEO of a BEM Group of Companies and co-founder of a Finite Women Appreciation Awards, and Nomsa Sibanda, a Zimbabwean currently based in the UK, co-founder of a Zimbabwe International Women Awards. Sibanda explains the aim of hosting the Zimbabwe Women International Awards.
The whole point of Zero was to include a platform specifically for Zimbabwean women, by Zimbabwean women, and to celebrate each other all over the world.
Ntsepe, what would you say the overall objective of hosting the Finite Women Appreciation Awards are?
What we decided to do was to recognize women because we realized that there were many activities that were recognizing men. We need to have women fill in the gap.
Nomsa, critics have termed initiatives like this as just ceremonial. Or what is it that you do to follow up on the activities of these women?
I think for us especially, it's quite quite vital for us to not just focus on the award. Throughout the year, we carry out a number of marketing campaigns, a community program. Some of the funding generated from the award show to go into local communities and make an impact. So we try to empower women, especially young women, start taking up those leadership, instilling in them that they can make a positive difference, that it's not about waiting for someone else to do for them, they can do for themselves.
Kudos, ladies. But have you thought about collaborating, going beyond the borders?
From where we stand right now, we have a room to move forward to say, let's recognize these women at the continental level. So for me, really, this is a breakthrough to say, if we're having these outstanding women in Lesotho and there are those outstanding women in other countries, let's collaborate. All the women who are doing all these initiatives to bring the women together, let's collaborate and make sure that we have one big show that calls for Africa Women Awards. And I think that's exactly where we can drive to through this mandate, which I appreciate very much.
Absolutely. I completely echo that as well. And, you know, I think the misconception that always happens is that just because there's an initiative that's at a local level, that it means that you're being exclusive. That's not the idea. I think it's more of looking at the fact that, okay, sometimes you need to make sure you fixed all your affairs at home first. Zimbabwe women can do it. Women in general can do it, and they should be empowered. So this is only the beginning. So if we start to build the Zimbabwe, the Lesotho, the bigger, we will unite. And it doesn't mean that we're excluding anyone. It's always open for partnerships and working together and collaborating. And we're all united in that one message of empowering women.
And Zepeng, we should admit, you and Nomsa, that the world that we live in has always seen men being the ones in the leading positions. And now the question of whether the woman is really ready to lead is the unspoken one. What is your take on that?
The woman is absolutely ready to lead. In Lesotho, as Basotho, we are taught that a woman is a child. But I think we are transiting from that mode. So at this time, women are understanding and they are appreciating their potential to say, now we can stand out, now we can be recognized. And what we have to do is that we, as other women, we should make it a point that we empower other women, because we have a tendency of downgrading or undermining the potential of other women because of the misconception that culturally women are supposed to be minors. So this is what we are driving at right now. We should understand that it's the issue of fighting culture and the issue of fighting development. And development says, hey, woman, you have to wake up. You have to make sure that you stand out there because your decisions are equally good as that of a man. And this is what we are driving on. So I'm saying, yes, as Lesotho, we are ready to take women to the next level.
Looking at Zimbabwe and Lesotho respectively, can we say that the traditional division between males and female occupation is still a relevant discussion at this point?
Absolutely. I think it still plays quite a vital role. But I think the difference that you're seeing in young people, especially, I mean, especially when you look at, like, you know, access to education, when you have, you know, more and more young women going to universities and, like, you know, graduating quite well, a lot of the time doing better than the men, getting into great positions professionally. I think the problem then becomes age per se, where people are starting to look at having a family. It's often, you know, someone being made to choose between focus your time on becoming a great mom and being a family woman, or focus fully on your career. There's no room for that balance, and that there's something that needs to be done to really support that.
What I can just say is, actually, women, we should actually be taking advantage of the situation, because for us, we're able to manage the two sides, and we are just being introduced to the other area, which traditionally we were not supposed to be there, where we are supposed to be decision makers, while culturally or historically women were supposed to be at the back end. Right now things are changing. We have realized that while men are supposed to be superior in one way or the other, but the bottom line is, where there's a head, there's a neck. So we are saying, let's use that neck wisely.
You were listening to The Women's Forum. I am Tato Muchoni, a Mandela Washington Fellow, interning with the Voice of America's Zimbabwe Services. Or standing in for Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Good night, Zimbabwe.
Thank you very much, Tato Muchoni. We hope you are going to have a wonderful day. And now to recap today's top stories. Critics say the future looks bleak for Zimbabwe, with indications that there's no solution in sight for the current harsh social, economic and political situation in the country. And American academic Jean-Marie Jackson says Zimbabweans are great debaters who can easily fit in any national or international stage on politics and related issues. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very good night.